Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Fonterra Q1 Business Update Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded, and I'd like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, to Mr. Miles Hurrell, CEO. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I'm here in the room, joined in the room by Mark Rivers and Simon Till. Intend to just run through very quickly the quarter one performance, touch on the milk price and the outlook for the year ahead. First of all, a pleasing result, 250 million EBIT, normalized EBIT up 40% or 72 million on the prior corresponding quarter one from last year. Good solid performance across key parts of our business being foodservice in China, which has very much bounced back from where we saw it at the low point post-COVID, and starting to see some signs of life out of the rest of Southeast Asia. Foodservice also. Consumer is going well throughout Southeast Asia and across Australasian markets as well. Volume and revenue are stable with last year, but gross margins are up and increase and operating expenses are down 5% also, giving, as I say, a normalized EBIT of 250 million or 72 million up on last year. Some good progress being made on the sale of China Farms, as you would have seen earlier in the quarter. That farm process has concluded from our perspective, just waiting now for regulatory approval, and our sell down of Beanmail stake continues as we speak. There are some things obviously beyond the numbers. We've done a partnership with Land O'Lakes in the last few weeks to accelerate our foodservice business by using our intellectual property in the U.S. We've obviously continued on our sustainability drive. The plant-based bottle here in New Zealand with our Anchor brand was launched, and also working on our installation of solar panels on both our Malaysian and Indonesian sites, which is a key milestone for us. Looking out for milk price, we have increased our milk price midpoint this morning to 7 dollars, up from 6.80 dollars. Our range now, and also narrowed the range, 6.70-7.30 dollars, on the back of, again, strong support and demand out of China. If I look out to the year ahead, so sorry, the remainder of the year, firstly, from a milk price perspective, yeah, we do need to consider and watch milk that's coming out of the Northern Hemisphere and what impact that may have. Obviously, the dollar will be an important aspect as well. When I look at the earnings, yeah, while we've had a strong start to the year, those COVID is still prevalent in a number of our markets, and it's making sure that we're agile and nimble as we progress. Obviously, supply chain disruption at a global level and whether that impacts on our business in the remainder of the year. So far, we haven't seen that impact our business, but as you will know, it's impacting a lot of businesses globally, so watching that very closely. Of course, the dollar, the impact on that would have on our business as well. That, at this stage, gives us the confidence to keep our earnings guidance of 0.20-0.35 here. Still that wider range than we had previously, just to recognize, firstly, the time of the year that we're in and that uncertainty that may exist. It's in our intention by mid-year to be in a position to start to narrow that range and give a bit more confidence. I intend from here just to open up for Q&A with either Simon, Mark, or myself. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Once again, it is star one. Thank you very much. Our first question in queue is from Chelsea Leadbetter from Forsyth Barr. Please ask your question, Chelsea.
Thanks, hi, Miles and team. Maybe just a couple of sort of high-level questions from me. I appreciate, Miles, you just touched on the supply chain kind of disruption that we're obviously reading quite regularly about. Just interested in, you know, from your perspective, what you are actually doing in that space and in terms of air freight, sea freight mix, you know, what's actually changed, and I guess, you know, potentially why you think so far you're weathering a little bit better than what we're hearing from others, and I guess maybe what you're doing to mitigate any concern or pressure or risk that may eventuate.
Yeah, sure. So I guess the first response around air freight versus sea freight. I mean, generally we don't air freight anything. I mean, we've had some of that urgent order that went up for medical nutrition at the back end of last year, which you may recall. But by and large, the vast majority of our product goes sea freight. It's the availabilities of empty containers is obviously the critical point that we're watching closely. But we entered into a long-term partnership, I think, in 2011 through our Kotahi ownership with Maersk Line and the Port of Tauranga, and that's really starting to pay dividends by giving us, I guess, that preferential treatment given our long-term agreement. I wouldn't say it can eliminates risk. You know, as the whole world starts to get into a crunch point, we need to watch that closely. But you know, having the ability to see what's going on internationally, you know, start working with those carriers directly, getting containers repositioned around the world ahead of our demand is something that's got us to this point. But we need to obviously continue to watch that closely from here.
And are you seeing any escalation in freight costs in the business?
Again, our long-term agreement has that smoothing over time, so we don't specify the impact of freight costs generally, but it's there's nothing material, and in general we have a smoothing approach to our sea freight costs.
Okay, not clear. And from a geopolitical landscape, obviously, again, been in the media quite a bit of late, is there anything, I guess, from your perspective that you can help us around colour or context or what you may be doing or thinking about in that space?
No, not other than what you would already see out in the market, but it's certainly concerning for us to see what's going on with some of our markets offshore, and obviously, you know, concern if there's a contagion effect around other countries, and in particular New Zealand. I'm confident that you know, Wellington and Beijing and Canberra and Washington will get themselves together at some point and work this through. But at the moment, it's certainly not a great situation, and something that obviously is concerning given our reliance on China and New Zealand. From an Australian perspective, the China business itself is actually quite small from a direct perspective. We don't send a heck of a lot of product from Australia direct into China. Secondary businesses do. We obviously have some strong customers in Australia that obviously make secondary product and sell to China, but that's something that would be of interest. But from a New Zealand perspective, would be the key for us to ensure that we don't see any escalation.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it's not an easy question to answer at the moment with, out of, I guess, your control. But and then just last question in terms of capital structure review. Is there any update you can give us around timelines or process at this point?
No, there's no update really. We continue to be looking at this. Key was to get the strategy sorted, and that's well on track. And so now we look at structure, but essentially this is a small group of management and board analyzing things, thinking things through. But there's no further update than that. And we'll, I think the chairman has said, we'll take the time that's needed. It's obviously a pretty big question, and we need to look at it from all the different angles. And as we do that, of course, it's consulting with all the stakeholders as well. There's certainly no silver bullets to things. There's always trade-offs whenever any tweaks are made. But it just needs to be fit for purpose and make sure that it's suited for what we need over the next 5 to 10 years.
Right. No, I appreciate the colour. Thank you, and a great start to the year. Thanks.
Thank you.
Our next telephone question is from Ari Decker from Jarden. Please ask your question, Ari.
Oh, good morning. Yeah. Just firstly on the OPEX, I mean, that was good to see those savings come through. Can you just talk a little bit to, whether there are any timing factors that we should take into account on the 5% reduction there? And what degree of sort of permanent sort of cost out you're still achieving through this year?
Yeah, there's always an element of time in everything, and you know, large chunk of spend is obviously people, but then you get into things like advertising, promotion, and depending on how our sales book's going, whether we go heavier or softer in that. So some of that is you bank for good. Others you may need to ramp up later in the year, depending on how your sales program's looking. But I mean, it's a hard question to answer. I wouldn't see it as I don't think you'll see it completely come back. But at the same time, you may not be able to bank completely 5% from here on as well.
Yep.
Great, thanks. Just an update on the timing of the China sale and you know, just the approvals and with a view to settlement.
Yeah. Hey, Ari. So SPA is signed. We're waiting for regulatory approvals, and so it's a little bit outside our hands how long that takes. But certainly, I'm confident that it'll be settled within the financial year. So we'll keep you updated as that rolls.
Sure. And then in the appendix, I think there's a reference, you know, to your new disclosure and what you're going to do there at half year. Just yep. In terms of the restatements for 19-20, what sort of the timing for that? Will that be ahead of the result or with the result? And also, will you be providing first half, second half splits on that historical disclosure?
Yeah, thanks, Ari. Yeah, so the answer is yes, we will, and we're aiming to be able to provide that to you before the interim, so you have a bit of time to digest it and analyze it and all that. But aiming for it, there's a bit of work to get to that, but and it will provide that kind of comparison data. It'll be essential for you to understand the new segment reporting.
Great, and then I guess just the last one, just on the healthy business metrics and that goal around 80% milk supply collection for the full year in line with FY20. Just in terms of competitor activity and sort of how you sort of feel in terms of how you're tracking to sort of holding that market share. What are you sort of seeing? Any comments you can make in terms of what you're seeing in the environment at the moment?
Yeah, it's hard. It's a very hard one to predict that number until we sort of clean up the books at the end of the year and know what farmers have left or come back or whatever the case may be. The only thing I would say to that, Ari, is that the sentiment on farm is for obvious reasons, is the best it's been for a long, long time. And, good positive momentum out there on farm. The process now for exiting or returning farmers opens now. We'll have a good handle by sort of the end of February how that sort of started to shape up. But it's not until right at the very end you get a feel. But as I say, sentiment on farm is the most positive it's been, certainly in the last... I'll go as far as a decade probably, if I can say that, despite a lot of compliance issues that are obviously coming down the line at farmers, which is a weight on their shoulders. But in terms of their engagement with the cooperative, I think they're in very good shape.
Oh, that's good to hear. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Aaron.
Next telephone question is from Marcus Curley from UBS. Please ask your question, Marcus.
Good morning. Can we just start with South America? Could you talk a little bit about how you're travelling in Chile and where you're up to with the Brazilian business?
Sure. So within the obviously we'll provide more breakdown at the interim around that. But I would say that Latin America actually has done well so far. So both Chile and Brazil. Operationally, good, encouraging results in Q1.
And the disposal of the Brazilian business?
Oh, sorry. And Brazil, so that's in process. Obviously, with Brazil being hit really hard with COVID, that's really slowed things down in terms of being able to have good discussions with potential buyers. But but we're still in the process there and in some conversations as well. What's helped, of course, is that we saw the trading results actually improve in the second half of last year, so improved in market shares and the like. So that makes it improves the story a little bit for our conversations.
Okay, and then back in New Zealand, you mentioned in the release, the ingredients business stable in the first quarter. As we step into the second half of the year, obviously you're lapping some very big comps in terms of stream returns. Is there anything that you're seeing within the ingredients business that'll help you offset those headwinds as we step into the second half?
Yeah, I'll tell you, in terms of stream returns, so Q1, pretty even on last year, Q1. What I do not expect is to repeat the really strong stream returns that we saw last year. That was quite unusual circumstances that led to that being very, very favorable. So I don't expect that to repeat in the second half. But having said that, from what we can see right now, track to to be able to achieve the stream returns that we've built into the guidance, but as you know, I mean, that's always a piece of volatility, and we'll have to keep monitoring that as the season unfolds.
Okay, and then just finally for me, two more. We've recently seen bigger buy the line business in Australia. How do you think about the competitive backdrop in Australia these days, and do you think Australia's moving towards being a more non-core operation?
I don't think the competitive situation's changed in Australia, and in fact, if anything, a bit of extra milk in that market on the back of favourable weather conditions compared to what they've had previously will hopefully even things out or calm it a little bit. So I don't see anything from that perspective. I mean, it is a key part of our business. We have a very strong both consumer and food service business in Australia, and even our ingredients business does complement what we do in New Zealand quite significantly. And we made an announcement a few months ago around a small acquisition in Australia, dairy country, and even that is complementary to what we do in New Zealand, who was sending cheese over there for repackaging and in some cases sending offshore and actually bringing some back to New Zealand. So it is quite integrated into what we do into New Zealand to a point.
Okay, and then as I said, one more, just on the dividends, can you provide any comments in terms of what you're thinking about for this year at this stage?
I can just make a comment. The dividend policy, 40-60% of what we've earned, and so and with caveats around where we are with our debt position and the like. So first on the debt position, the good news is we're tracking well on that, and we ended at 3.4 debt to EBITDA last year. And we intend to improve that in the course of the year, so we're tracking well for that. So I don't expect that to inhibit being able to pay out that 40-60% range. But obviously, it's always subject to board approval and looking at the whole context. But if we generate the earnings that we're predicting, then we should be in a position to be able to exercise that dividend policy.
Okay, thank you.
Our next telephone question is from Nick Kamar from Macquarie. Please ask your question, Nick.
Hey, guys, just a couple of quick ones. The other earnings line, that was quite a big delta. Can you just talk about what the main movements in that were and whether or not that's kind of a sustained improvement?
Yeah, sure. So so part of that actually is the improvement in our joint venture, China Farms. Last year was struggling a bit, so we saw some improvements on this year. So that's about a quarter of the improvement. The rest of it is kind of bits and pieces. There were some FX related hits that were in last year's results that did not repeat this year. So that essentially explains the rest of it. So it's not just one thing.
Cool. And then just on free cash, the reason why that's kind of more negative, is that just the milk price level, or is that something else?
Yeah, the main thing on free cash flow is just to bear in mind that last year we had the Food Spring proceeds that came through. So that's probably the single biggest positive item that was there last year that does not repeat this year. Yeah, I'd say that's,
and CapEx a little bit.
And then CapEx a bit as well. But the other bit of it is you'll recall at the end of last year with the lockdown, we weren't able to get to all the projects that we wanted to get to in the winter shutdown. So kind of making up for a little bit of that. So it's just a bit of timing around CapEx. But we're nothing that we're concerned about for in terms of free cash flow for the full year.
Okay, no, that's great. That's all for me. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you wish to ask a question, it is star one. Once again, it is star one. There were no further questions in the queue. Yep, please go ahead and continue.
Great. Thank you. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining today. Of course, the investor relations team available for any further follow-up questions you have. But thanks for your support. And if we don't talk, have a great Christmas, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the call. Thank you very much and goodbye.